This is a 3CR podcast.
And this is Published or Not. David, I'm the only Jan. One in this studio that hasn't written a book.
Oh, dear me. But Jan, are you as childish as everybody else around you? Because I think we've got a common theme. Access your inner child.
I like to read a good kid's book full of humour that I just know that the adults are going to laugh at too.
Well, I think we'll keep the listener very happy today. I have an old friend of mine and an old friend of the show with me today with his latest book, Prehistoric Peril. So, George Ivanoff, welcome back to 3CR.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be here.
But we weren't here when you did your first book, though, were we? Or how long, when were you first in here?
I forget, but it was with one of the gamers' novels.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That might have been with you, Jack.
It certainly was. It must have been about 12 years ago.
Yeah, amazing. Like, so we keep...
Time marches on.
But the title I have in front of me is part of a whole series...
Yes, it is.
...of Choose Your Own Adventure. And I want to explore that genre just a little more closely. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is the fascination for the reader with this form? And just as significantly, what does the reader learn from the approach?
Well, I think part of the appeal is the whole choice thing. You know, I think it's about as close to a video game as you can get reading, because you are making these choices and the story branches off just as it would in a video game. I think the other appeal is the shortness of it all. You know, with the diminishing attention spans and all the competing stuff for people's attentions, the ability to read something and actually get through an entire story fairly quickly, but then still have the book there to go back to afterwards.
But you can read it more than once, though.
Exactly,
and find something different each time. So there's a fascination with, and you know, that would be, hopefully encourage readers when they approach novels in later life, because you can read a novel more than once. But previously, we've looked at the challenges of planning the various threads of interconnectedness of narratives. This is your 14th one.
Yes,
this
series.
Has it got any easier?
No.
No.
Okay. Matter of fact, I make things more difficult for myself, because this time round it's you know, you choose mega rather than just you choose. So it's actually a lot longer. So the standard books were about 14,000 to 15,000 words each, and this one's 28,000 words.
Leads on to a couple of other questions. I mean, Prehistoric Peril, the amount of research, actually, that you've got to go into. You know, we've got the Jurassic, the Cretaceous. You've even got a list of the types of dinosaurs you're going to come across.
Absolutely. I put that fact and fiction thing at the end of the book, because I'm a bit of a dinosaur nerd. I like dinosaurs, so any excuse to get some real dinosaurs.
But the accuracy of the detail and the research that's actually got to take place, even though it's sort of... well, I won't say trivial, but the nonsense that takes place.
Oh, it's completely over-the-top action-adventure.
But it still has to be accurate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Every dinosaur that appears in there, you know, is a real dinosaur that I did research and read about, you know, except for, you know, the obvious cases where you've got the genetically manipulated...
The Chuchosaurus. Creatures.
The Chuchosaurus, yes. They sadly did not exist.
But we could create them. Wouldn't that be a wonder... I mean, you know, can you think of your chicken casserole with a Chuchosaurus? But anyway, I think we digress.
Well, you know, sometimes I feel that we are reaching that point when I go and, you know, buy a chicken thigh fillet at the supermarket that is larger than any, you know, chicken I can conceive of.
No, it's all artificially pumped up with water.
So
and
are we really that far from the Chuchosaurus is what I ask.
The inner child is coming out, Jan, look out. The writing of such a title, I mean, when you look at the narrative, it's almost a series of mini chapters that must lead to another option that actually goes forward or back into one of the narrative threads that you've got. But it's a particularly compact form of writing.
Yes, yeah, and it's very interconnected. So, you know, yes, you can look at each of those little mini stories or whatever individually, but they all have to fit together as well.
Yeah.
And lead in back to, you know, what I call the main safe happy ending pathway, because, you know...
Happy ending? People die in this. You're
absolutely
dead.
But you've got to have at least one or two happy endings. I'm sure readers would get very frustrated with me if all I ever did was kill them. You know, I have to assure them that there are safe ways through this story.
But, you know, each little pocket of information before you go on to the next page or, you know, further down or whatever. But you're also writing in the second person. We don't actually see that often in novels.
Well, no. It would. I mean, there are a couple of famous cases of novels having been written in second person, but it's not the average way of doing it.
But why is it needed for the choose your own?
Well, because the reader is actually being put into the story. And they become the main character.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a format that was begun with the old Choose Your Own Adventure novels.
Mm.
The whole interactive format for storytelling has changed over time, and lots of people have done different things with it. There's a series here in Australia, Choose Your Own Ever After. They're like tween romance novels done as Choose Your Own Adventure-style books. But in those books, they're not written in second person because they're not putting the reader in. You are making choices on behalf of your lead character. So you're basically playing God. So it takes a different approach from the standard approach. But yeah, as a kid, I always liked the ones that put you into the story because I liked being in the story. And I very much write the sort of stuff that I wanted to read as a kid.
Bringing out the inner child. The plot lines would be a challenge to keep the reader entertained. So, for example, we are on a school excursion in this dinosaur encounter. How do you utilise the expected and the unexpected?
Well, you know, I like playing with stereotypes and tropes and stuff. So, you know, a story like this where there are illegal genetic experiments going on behind the scene, you have to have your mad scientist. But I didn't want to give people your typical mad scientist, so I gave them this really lovely elderly lady who's kind of like your lovely grandmother with a secret that she genetically manipulates things and tries to turn you into a dinosaur creature. So, you know, I like playing with those things and you know, hopefully doing something a little bit unexpected with them.
But also then to keep your reader entertained, I'm just going to read something that's a little gross, but I think your reader would actually identify with this. One last squeeze, and you find yourself being expelled from the robotic, skinless T-Rex as it poops you out onto the floor. You land in the centre of a massive pile of stinky, sticky dinosaur feces. You wipe the muck from your face, your eyes streaming and your throat constricting as you splutter and gag. You see a face looking down at you. "That was incredible," says the woman with curly hair. She's no longer angry. Her face is alight with enthusiastic joy. "I designed this robot as a demonstration model of T-Rex musculature and of the gastrointestinal system, and you've just proved it works."
It's funny you should bring that up. I did a school visit yesterday at a girls' school, and one of the girls asked me during question time of, you know, why do I get so gross in some of my storylines in these books? And so I answered, because I'm a boy and boys are gross.
But they'd identify with it. I mean, it's that age when you're finding out about yourself and all sorts of things, the physicality and the smells and all sorts of things. And yes, boys tend to be stinky. Basic. Would you say more boys read your books than girls, or how does it go?
Well, that is the popular misconception, as I like to put it. I mean, they're very much aimed at boys in terms of marketing.
Yeah.
You might notice that the average reader that they've put on the front cover of all the books is a boy. But no, there are a lot of girls reading the books, and a lot of girls asking me, why aren't there girls on the front cover?
Well, a series of Choose Your Own for girls? Could there be such a thing?
Oh, absolutely. The Choose Your Own Ever After books that I mentioned earlier, tween romances, very much aimed at girls.
But, I mean, that's stereotypical with the romance. Yes, I'm just wondering about the activity, you know.
Look, certainly with my books, I try to make sure that there's, you know, some gender parity in there in terms of character and stuff like this. And I've certainly found that the girls are just as interested in the gross stuff as the boys are.
Secretly.
They are just as interested in the over-the-top action adventure as the boys are. So I think it's a bit of a misconception to say that only boys read over-the-top action adventure, you know, like this. The girls do too. I mean, I spoke at a girls' school yesterday and... You know, 2 year levels of very enthusiastic girls who were reading these books.
Yeah. And you hit on certain tropes and play and toy with certain tropes with the characters. Mm. I mean, you've already mentioned Dr. Splizer, who's the mad scientist, female, I should point out, and the Chuchosaurus was her sort of incarnation. Dr. Smith and time travel.
Yes, that's my Doctor Who reference.
Well, I was thinking Lost in Space. It was a Dr. Smith.
No. It's a Doctor Who reference because I'm a huge Doctor Who fan and all my books contain hidden Doctor Who references. And so the story about time travel, the scientist had to be called Dr. Smith because the Doctor refers to himself as Dr. Smith when he is on Earth. Being a scientific advisor to UNIT, and I've just thrown a whole bunch of irrelevant Doctor Who facts at you and the listeners that nobody cares about except me.
Well,
there you go.
A secret reading of the story, Professor Calcifer, but sonic location. How real is that?
Oh, only vaguely. I'd read an article somewhere about the use of sonic technology as, you know, potential weaponry and stuff. But mostly it comes from Doctor Who again, because, you know, sonic weapons have been used in Doctor Who for years in various ways, shapes or forms, and I wanted to bring it in to my story.
You've also had to integrate technology. We've got virtual reality, which actually allows you to sort of change a narrative, because are we in... reality or virtual reality?
Indeed, and I like playing with that, but it also, the whole virtual reality aspect gave me a chance to throw the readers directly into a threatening situation with a dinosaur on the very first page, which I couldn't have done with the main storyline because, of course, it takes a while for the students to, you know, make their way through the center they're at and to find out about all the stuff happening behind the scenes. But putting them into a virtual reality game right at the beginning allowed me to give you a dinosaur on the very first page, a threat, a choice, but not actually kill the reader off yet.
You can't kill the reader off before after the first page. One last final reference. Poor Mr. Hendrickson.
The long-suffering teacher.
Which I can identify with, and the only recourse he's got is your punishment is extra homework.
But he turns out to be nice in the end because he submits the essay that you write as punishment into a competition where you end up winning the prize. So, you know,
there's value in it. The Choose Your Own Mega Adventure. This one's Prehistoric Peril, George Ivanov, and it's from Penguin Books. George, thank you very much for talking to me once again.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Well, we're going from the prehistoric peril to the fantastical future. Did you find making friends at school was easy? What about when you moved from primary to high school? Joel McEnroe has written Heist, a book that both kids and parents will enjoy. Welcome, Joel.
It's fantastic to be here. Thank you.
Not like George, this is your first time here and we're delighted. Andy McGee may have been the cool kid at primary school, but started high school only knowing one other person, Marley.
Mm-hmm.
Were they friends?
No, they definitely weren't. So Heist, these two wonderful kind of main characters, Marley has a bit of a crush on Andy McGee, but Andy McGee, he's very much trying to distance himself from the nerdy kind of character that is Marley Baluby.
Two others new to high school knew each other at primary school too, Nick and Fleecy. A quote from the book, he was buttery smooth. She was like sandpaper, gritty and grating. Mm-hmm. She was also the Joker of Year 7 and not to be heckled. With Nick, his superpower was charm and manipulation. Then the fifth one, Jasmine Quinn. Mm. What was her superpower?
Jasmine Quinn is the silent kind of stealthy character because it's a heist, right? So this is the heist squad, all these characters that you've just mentioned. So she's the stealthy kind of character that she just disappears into the background. You don't even know she's really there, but she's up to mischief always.
The stealth ninja. Yeah, sneaky sneak. They've started at Ballington High School with Principal Mr. Jenkins, who has a loud voice with keys to lock the gates like a prison. And like a prison, it also has an underground series of cells. Mm. So these five, and I like other quotes from the book, like a party mix lolly bag or mismatched mischief makers, are in science class together. And they all get lunchtime detention. And this was Fleecy's plan.
It was her plan all along.
To achieve what?
To achieve what? So she wanted to steal some chocolates. She'd heard that there were chocolates in the science cool room. So she devised a plan. She's kind of the planner. Mm. It ends up being very much the big planner of the group for them to be able to get in there and steal the chocolates. But, I mean, they all had to get detention. Well, at least a few of them had to get detention and some kind of became ring-ins. So she was throwing a half-dissected frog through the air straight at the teacher, splattering onto the whiteboard and all over the teacher's face.
And did I laugh? Yes. While they're in the science storeroom trying to steal this chocolate for the Year 12 graduation, they overhear their very loud principal that more chocolate is being made in the basement lab. But there's a sinister plot.
There is.
To this chocolate. What's going to happen?
Oh, are we allowed to give away the sinister plot?
We've got to give it a little bit away because because we have to go into the next book.
Oh, we do. So let's give it away, right?
Just
so
this a smidge.
Oh, how do you give a smidge away of this? Basically, there is a group that is trying to take over the world. And as you can imagine, so these kids, they kind of work out, they have to steal this chocolate. They have to steal this chocolate. Otherwise, the entire world shall be in utter peril.
And these strange things are aliens from Atlathenia.
Atlathia, yeah.
And they have to take on new forms because what's their true form like?
Their true form is pretty gross. So they've got a few different types that you'll find out kind of later on in the series. But one of the main ones is they're quite a lizard form, actually, a lizard-esque form of alien. Another is quite a spludgy purple kind of jelly-like form as well.
Well, the description of the heist is full on climatic drama with hilarious twists and a true friendship developing between the five. But this is not an ending. They are also very surprised when the school hasn't said anything about the great chocolate caper heist. Mm-hmm. There was no acclaim for them. And what had happened to all the damage that had occurred?
Yeah, so once they, because they basically in stealing the chocolate, like half the school gets destroyed and filled with chocolatey goodness splurted everywhere. But then they come back a few days after, and the whole thing is cleaned up, moving into the second book, right? So someone has cleaned the whole thing up. There's not a trace of anything that's happened.
Could this be a quote, a government-sponsored billionaire-run tech company conglomerate behind all this?
It could indeed be that. That's exactly what it could be.
So we go on to the next book in the heist series, The Remarkable Robot Robbery. And between these two books, Andy has practiced his magic tricks. Mm-hmm. Fleecy, the planner, learns about lock picking. Jasmine has started filming everything. And Marley, the nerd girl, even gets more computer techie. Mm-hmm. But she also opens up to her friends about her disability.
She does, yes. So Marley, I love Marley, the character, and lots of people do too, I'm finding out, which is great. Marley has CP, she has cerebral palsy. And so throughout the book, she walks with a limp and has to use leg braces at times. And so she has this kind of disability, which for Andy, he's never even considered or thought about what life must be like for her. And so there's these moments where Andy has to come to a bit of a self-realization about his own entitlement and not even thinking about what life might be. And so she confronts him a lot, actually, and gets right up in his face and says, you don't get how this has affected me in my life. And they have quite the interesting relationship, those two.
When she tells the others in this group, it really does bring about a type of empathy, understanding, apology even.
Yes, totally. Because Fleecy is kind of the bully of the group, right? And she just has thrown, as often is the case, sadly, in our world, little kind of micro comical things that are actually in many ways forms of bullying, right? And put people in their place. And so she gets challenged on this, and all of them get challenged essentially by Marley opening up and saying, this is what's happening for me. This is what my life has been like, which is a hugely brave step, but it also has any moments of authentic, beautiful self-disclosure. It brings about a real bonding between them.
Through the book, apart from the aliens and all this mayhem that develops, there's real positive kid reinforcement. Mm. And a quote by Andy, well, what makes you weird is actually your superpower.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's I'm hugely passionate. I've done kind of education work for a long time and worked with young people. And it's one of the messages that I bring in everywhere that I go, that you're the thing, especially in high school, right, that kids want to push down. And because it makes them stand out, it makes them slightly weird or strange. Actually, that's what they should shape their whole lives around. So in this context, it's their superpower, right? But I think for any of us, like in these schools that we get to go in as authors and talk to the kids, to see kids who previously have squashed down a lot of their creative stuff because it's not the done thing at their school, and then suddenly they have this opportunity to go, oh, this is something I can give myself to. So I loved bringing that into these books as well.
Well, the other thing you've brought in is the alien resistance going on, and they get a message to get to Sydney.
Yep.
So how do the squad get to Sydney?
Yeah, second book is called The Remarkable Robot Robbery. So they're going to Sydney to compete in the National Battle Bot Championships, the National Robot Battle Championships, which you might have seen on TV or little clips of essentially little robots on wheels battling each other, fighting it out. That's their cover. That's their cover story. Really, they're going to commit a heist of Orbital, which is this governmental-backed group. But they're into the robots.
Look, these fights, they are described in such crushing detail, shall we say, through the book. And one of the robots that they'd make, possibly, could have a life of its own. Now, as well as the five, there is now an alien helping and giving sarcastic comments and great insults. Fraggle Zap, Zorblat, Gronk Strapper, Wimpy Blarnix, Blap Walker.
That was great pronunciation there. I like that, yeah.
Well, your imagination for these words, is it linked to your poetry? Or?
Possibly it comes out of my poetry. It just came out by sitting there typing, going, what's an alien-esque word that I would love to call someone when they're annoying me? Maybe a Gorblax muncher. Like, who knows what that might be, but it's fun.
Saf the alien explains why Athelians are on Earth, and whenever she talks, it's in a different typeface, which makes it easy for us to read and understand. Mm-hmm. So just better give us a little bit. What are the Vortaliks?
Ah, yes. So this Atlathean group of aliens, they have, in the first book, there's a few of them who want to take over the world, but really they've actually all escaped from their own planet.
They're refugees.
They're refugees. They're alien refugees because the Vortaliks has taken over their world, right? So they've escaped to Earth. So the first book, our heisters are trying to save the humans from this alien group. But the second book, they realize, oh, we have to save the aliens now from this Earth group, Orbital, who are wanting to destroy the aliens.
Back to the climatic pot of this book, and this is a quote. There are epic robot battles, hidden tunnels, amusement park chases with heroic feats, magic tricks, and another magnificent heist of an utterly impossible scale. Mm-hmm. And in both books, you did the heist in a series of countdown days.
Yes.
So this requires very good plotting.
Yes, plotting these things, I think, like George's Choose Your Own Mega Choose books. I think, like, it's incredibly difficult to take what is a very complicated thing, the ending of a massive heist, and then work out all your threads going back throughout your story to make sure they've got what they need to do the heist at the end. It's a lot of plotting, yeah.
And the next heist, read on to the third book, mm-hmm. Heist, the Ultimate Alien Swindle.
Yes, perhaps they do end up taking on the Vortalix.
As Andy McGee says, once again, no biggie, it's just what we do.
That's exactly right.
You had, in George's book, it was a teacher who really was very nice. In this book, it's how to deal with an intolerant, bigoted, sexist buffoon of a teacher.
Yes.
Oh, it was a wonderful read.
It's a lovely start to the book, filled with similar to George's feces moments. Yes. There is some explosion of such things in this book too.
A heist, a robbery, a theft planned and undertaken to not only save the Earth, but even refugees from another planet. Science fiction at its most dramatic, absurd and humorous for kids and their parents to read in the Heist Trilogy by Joel McCarro. Look, it, both books, fantastic. Now, got to ask, both George and Joel, writing for kids, it seems so easy, is it?
No. I don't think it's any different to writing for any other age group or target audience. It comes with its own challenges, its own pleasures, its own unique approach.
Mm. And it's putting yourself back into the, I mean, maybe what helps us is we can put ourselves back into ourselves as teenagers trying to go through life, figure the world out as teenagers, which kind of gives you that ability to go, oh, this was the wrestles that I was feeling, therefore I can bring this into my character.
Is that a place you want to revisit?
Is that a place you want to sometimes?
I don't think it's a place I've ever left.
Well, in fact, Heist the Great Chocolate Caper came out of my own story of me in grade 7 stealing chocolate from my school. It was the inspiration for this book.
Mm-hmm. You're finally admitting to it.
Well, that's right.
After all those years.
No, we got busted. I didn't have to.
Dear. Penalty and punishment. I put in a word there for teachers holding the moral fortress and such like. Look, we have disinfectant here and cloth, which for COVID protocols, but after all the grossness, I think we might have to mop out the studio, Jan.
You've just been listening to Published or Not on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.